Welcome to In Conversation with Heartlines, a show where we try and help you do what's right so you can fix the things that are wrong. I'm your host, Hloni Ramsolo.
A values-based life starts here.
Before we start with today's topic, I want you to take a moment and think about how do people treat you? Not just your friends or your family, but strangers too. When you walk into a room, how long does it take before you feel kindness, compassion, before someone actually sees you? Not your title, not your clothes, just you. Do people respect you? And when it comes to your boundaries, are those boundaries honored or crossed without a second thought? Now let's flip the mirror for a second. How do you treat others? Do you offer the same respect? The same space that you wish others gave you? And if you're a dad or a father figure, have you ever stopped to think about the values that you've passed on? The lessons you've taught your child about respect, empathy, and boundaries, not through your words, but through the way you live. Today, we are joined by Seth Nyker, Pastor, Heartlines Facilitator, Leadership Consultant, and most importantly, a dad who's going to explore the vital role fathers play in shaping how the boy child understands respect and boundaries. Seth, great to be in conversation with you. Welcome.
Hello, Little Honolo. Good to be with you all as well. And happy to be part of this conversation. And hello to all of the listeners.
Seth, I think you're the perfect person to have a conversation with regarding this topic. Today, we're talking the role fathers play in teaching boundaries and respect. Jumping straight into it, what are boundaries? We want to define it. What is it? What is it not? And how do we boundary in an Ubuntu or community context?
You know, I was thinking about my dad, Little Konolo, and I think one of the boundaries he taught about or put in place was when I got married, he said to my wife, if anything that my son does out of order that you do not appreciate or that you don't like, you call me. You know, my dad laid down a values-based custom that would help protect our well-being. But the idea was that this would set in motion a safety container for the well-being of myself and my wife, Marisha. Culturally, I don't really relate all that well with just, you know, setting up fine boundaries. I think boundaries also, they cross over. But when I spoke to my kids in preparation for some of the work we are doing around the boundary dialogues, or if I can say, what are the boundaries that we're facing? My son said, Daddy, what's my limits? My daughter told me, you know, it's the things you teach me, Dad, to help me to understand right from wrong. So I think in that way, the boundary conversation is really about the well-being of yourself, the well-being of others, and the well-being of your environment. And how do you interact in a place where there's respect for you, there's respect for others, there's respect for an environment? And at times you may find that our lives cross over, but still within the crossing over, it depends on how those lines intersect. Sometimes it could be tightly woven, you know, like a mosaic of sorts. And at other times you might have more space and more loosely arranged. But do we have our spaces and our places and containers, if I can say, that create a bubble of safety, in this way, a boundary of safety for the well-being of yourself, for the well-being of others in your life and in your community, and then for the well-being of your environment.
Now, Seth, having that said, how and when do children first start learning about boundaries?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to reflect on the journey that you've been on. And I think you learn about boundaries in ways that, if I think one of the simple things was being aware of fire and people showing you the heat and letting you know where you shouldn't touch, where you shouldn't go. So we're always interacting in that way. In my own journey with football, I think we had to learn what was the play that would make it happen for us to get to that goal. And you knew where you had to place the ball. But within the game of soccer, there's those lines, right? And then at times you're watching for that offside. You know, what are the things that we are teaching to our children or learning together with our adult partners that are helping us, you know, watch out for, in the soccer terminology that I would say, watch out for the offside. You know, you want to keep that game going so you can keep that play going, so you're getting to the success of scoring. So I think we're learning all the time about boundaries. I think what I observe in my journey with my children is having conversations with them. Listen, this is how you're going to watch out for your safety, talking about safety issues in the context of our country, you know, how to respect. Like, I remember having a conversation with him. I said, look, you'll have your opinions, you'll have your viewpoints, but I ask you, when you're talking to one of your aunts and uncles, try not to disrespect them. Share what you're thinking in a respectful way and try and model that for them So I see that happening, you know, throughout one's life. And as you learn, sometimes you might be learning unhealthy boundaries. Then you got to work out, hey, is this actually good for me? Is this actually good for my life? So I find myself talking to my children a lot about their safety, their well-being, how they treat others in the space of schools. We have to be careful because, you know, some children come into the public space of schooling, into the public atmosphere, and they might be reared by another context, another environment. And if you think about our schooling sector, I mean, some children have it really, really tough because of issues of bullying and or bullyism, issues of being teased, mocked, and jeered. And those customs and cultures are coming into the public space that our children enter or the social life, from whence those children that are bringing that kind of treatment of others into the space. But it comes from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Comes from a family culture, family practice. Sometimes they say, you know, what you do in practice is what you end up doing in the game. So we're having to coach our children, speak to our children about the boundaries that will allow them to feel safe. And then also placing in these limits, these containers of possibility that allow for others to feel respected and safe as well.
You know, you actually answered a question that I was going to ask you, because it sounds like you have an open and honest relationship of conversation with your children. But my next question is, how can fathers model healthy boundaries and teach respect, you know, especially in a world where those lines are often blurred or crossed?
This one is not an easy one for me personally, Little Honolo. I think also with the fact that I have a different way of thinking. So like personal space, like if you think about personal space, I don't always connect with personal space the way that one is supposed to, I think, you know. So what helps me is to have a courageous partner in my life, like Marisha, who, you know, I've been journeying with for quite a number of years now. We married for 24 years, we've been together for 30. So I think her voice to me as a partner, as my wife, as we work out marriage together, has been, Seth, this is how to interact with social spaces. Because sometimes I might be too much in a person's face, you know what I'm saying? And so one has got to learn that for themselves. And it depends also on your culture and your context that you come from. Say, for example, you grew up in a context where your family household had lots of people and you regularly, you know, were around people all the time, or you had a small space that you lived in with many folk in your home. How do you then set up personal space in that kind of a way? Or how do you understand what's my space and your space? So I guess you come into it in your own, in a way of coming to acknowledge and understand, listen, this is what needs to work, and also what has to work for me and work for others. So you kind of work into the space of a value like empathy and self-awareness. You know, what's the self-awareness that you have of what you need to survive? So I think for men out there and fathers out there, are we aware of what triggers us or what presses our buttons or what makes your heat gauges go up? Do you know what are the limits that you're setting so that you don't respond in unhealthy ways? So I think coaching and mentoring is an important piece of the puzzle for many men and fathers out there, so that they can actually bounce the ideas off and learn more healthy ways. Some of the things my dad did were excellent, and you know, I learned from it. But some of the things my dad may have done may have not been things that I can carry forward into this context of my life. Like, I'm living in a time where we got like Gen Alphas, Gen Zs, you know, these kind of kids. They have some assertiveness that back in the day, if I said something like that, someone would, you know, want to maybe give me a solid hiding, you know. And now we try to talk to our kids. So one of the things I had to learn over time in my parenting journey is that I'm going to do away with physical punishment because this is not helpful to my children. We still might have, you know, the journey of talking directly and maybe even sometimes scolding, unfortunately. But what are the boundaries? How do I engage with this child that I love? And so as a father, I find that the helpful way for me is having people that can talk to me openly. So with my children, I've tried, Little Konola, to say to them, while I am your dad, you are my child, and I need to know how's the best that I can show up for you. You know, what kind of age range? Yeah, I was talking to my child like this at, you know, 5 years, 6 years old. Now I have an 18-year-old daughter who I speak to. And in some ways, I can be honest with you and say that my daughter's coached me on how to be a better dad, because she's letting me know, Dad, this is what I need from you. This is how I need you to show up best for me. So in that way, she's setting up an environment that best is for her. And I've got her in this, if I can say, the social contract of being her father, being her dad. Then I get the honor to say, okay, fine, where can I meet you on this journey of life as we meet at the crossroads, so to say.
I love the way you intertwined the lessons that you learned from you being a father and also making reference to how you were fathered by your own father. And obviously the way that you father is much different, as I hear from you, as how your father fathered. But I want to ask you, Seth, going back to your relationship with your father, have there been any ways, or in what ways has your father's words or maybe his actions shaped your own ability to be able to set the boundaries that you speak of and in a manner of speaking show respect in kind?
I learned a few years ago about the Sankofa, you know, space of life, or the Sankofa metaphor that comes out of Ghana. And in this metaphor, they tell the story of this metaphoric talking that, you know, where I am in life, I'm reflecting on where I've come from in order that I may understand where I'm at and then, you know, work out where we want to be. Yeah, I think there's some things that I can say I've inherited and I keep close. And there's some things that I can say, no, that's what I'm leaving behind. My dad was a lot more equitable in his journey with my mom. However, he grew up in the 60s, 70s, you know, and his journey with my mom over 45 years of marriage. Grew up in a space where we couldn't talk really much about, or they couldn't talk about, the rights of his wife, the rights of woman leadership in the workplace, in the church context. And yet my mom was a very leading personality. She led in the corporate space. She had a career in the bank and then transitioned into the social and NGO and community sector. But she always seemed to be a leading. And I watched them go back and forth. But yet my dad was a great supporter of his wife. We growing up in an environment where there is an expectation for equality and for the rights of women in our society. And so it's much more forward thinking in that way. So when I'm reflecting on this, I think like there's many things that I am having to deal with now in this context that my dad didn't, you know, in some ways. But yet there may be some things that seem that they repeat themselves. So as I look at the journey of the past and the present, I think one of the important pieces of the puzzle I've tried to do is be more present in not just the provision space of trying to provide for my family, but also I'm showing up. I don't get it right all the time. I think any person out there, we must be bold enough to acknowledge where we ourselves are falling short or where are the gaps in life. So one of the practices I've tried to do is find a place that I have friends to talk to, mentors that I can engage, prayer partners. A few years ago, I took on the practice of silent prayer just to calm my own mind and posture myself well. Why? Well, because of the busyness of life, the hustle, so that I could also be emotionally well and healthy in light of how I serve my children. So those kind of things, I think, are more we're getting as a father that I am now. I think we allow to express a little bit more about the hurts and pains of men. I'm not saying that it's like that for everybody. In a society where many men feel like, oh, you still got to be the strong man. Some men are still learning. But I'm grateful for the reality also that there are men that have been on a learning journey where we can be more expressive. Now, in that way, I think I'm living in a different time than my dad lived. We allowed as men, and I am allowed as a father, to be more open about how I'm feeling, how I'm engaging. So these kind of practices have been helpful to me. Firstly, taking care of myself. If I'm well, then I can also be well for my children. I can be well for my wife. I can be well for my family and my colleagues. And that means I got to have the space and this place that I am grounding in values, grounding in practices, grounding in customs that are actually going to create a container of well-being for me to be the best that I can be.
Seth, you know, you mentioned something that it comes to the lessons that you learn from your father. There are things that you take with you. There are some things that you have to leave behind. You also mentioned that, you know, along the journey, fathers learn on their own as they are fathering now their own children. But I want to ask you, Seth, have you ever had to unlearn something specifically that your father taught you about authority or control or even respect? And what helped you specifically shift?
I think my dad was less of a patriarchal character than most in his time coming up. So I never really sensed that. But like one of the things that I know he struggled with was how does he show up in a world where men are supposed to be the leading voice? You got to be the head of your home. And I guess my mom and dad, they kind of co-shared and coexisted. So I'm grateful to God I had a father like that who taught me and also wanted me to understand that when I'm getting married and my time comes and I'm going to settle down, that he has expectations of me to actually serve my wife and my family well. In the context of respect, though, something that comes to mind is my dad said to me, and this comes out of the time of, remember, I grew up in a time when apartheid was still in motion. And as I came to the ending of my high school career, you know, we saw the birth of what we would call our democracy. And my dad kind of challenged me in light of the respect space, more especially I'm thinking, to be respectful to people, but also to be assertive where required, especially since I was a child in the context of a racialized South Africa. He wanted me to go to places, try things, and be bold about my future in a context where for him as a person of color in South Africa, a lot of the powers that be and the system that he was in, he felt like he didn't have power. And to be honest, I think in many ways, people would say, oh, you know, look at Seth. He seems to be direct and courageous. But I grew up as a quiet child. It was only in my teen years through football and high school that I made a decision. You know, I got to be bolder. And part of that was the voice of my parents, my mom and my dad, encouraging me to be more questioning and critically thinking. So that's some of the pieces of the puzzle I think I've brought forward into my own family. While we don't live in an apartheid state today, but there are other issues that keep us divided. We still see economic gaps. I'm trying to teach my children, listen, have a view of the world where you're asking questions, where you're asking critical questions that help you to explore, to understand. Try not to just ring fence people and put them into stereotypes. So what do with my children? I make sure that if I say that I'm going to Soweto, I want them to be with me in Soweto as well. You know, if I'm going to Santon, I want them to check out Santon as well. And why am I saying that? I think like many people don't understand that for some of us, when we grew up, I'm a child born in the 70s. The first time I drove out to the north side of Johannesburg, where my parents had lived for a long time in Joburg South, when I was 16 years old, because we weren't allowed to go there. Now we're allowed to go to places. We have a freedom. We have a so-called democracy that is still in many ways developing. There are lots of issues in our democracy, but we still seem to be confined. So I'm trying to bring it into space and I want my children to know people from different walks of life. How do I make that practical? I don't want them to be scared. I want them to be free, to be themselves, and to allow who they are to interact with their space where they know what they require to be safe, as well as to have their have eyes in the back of your head, have some street smarts. So whether you're in a township or you're in a middle-class area, a suburb or a city, I want my children to be well understanding people and global citizens in this way of understanding the world that they are in.
That is a very admirable trait for a father to have, Seth, you know, to be able to teach your children things that you never were able to experience as a child. You said that there are many dividing worldviews and many dividing opinions. And when you look at the space of social media, you see that a lot, particularly in this conversation, Seth. What's the difference between submission and unhealthy obedience? And how can fathers teach this wisely to their children?
So when I think about, you know, big major topics, normally theology comes into mind, you know, because theology speaks to me. And when I hear the word like submission, this is a hard one to talk to children about today, because you can be talking to a 10-year-old son and he's got a viewpoint. What do I actually want him to submit to? You know, so what am I responding? What am I reacting to? And sometimes we have to delay our response time. So when I hear like people saying hard and fast things like submission, submission sounds to me in a very autocratic way. You know, if I set it up and my son or my daughter or my children understand what's best, imagine we're having a conversation about what's safer, what's better. If we take their views into play and take it into mind, yes, I think we can come to a common ground where we say, listen, this is where we should go, this is where we shouldn't go. Or I'm just going to be walking around like a dictatorial dad the whole time. Sometimes, unfortunately, I feel like that when I'm not in the best space for myself. So, Little Konolo, when I think about this topic of submission and having my children with me, I feel like if I can present myself to them in the best way and present to them why this is the way to go, I'm actually engaging with people that have minds. Now, a lot of the time, you know, in children's rights, we say to them, no, you're the child, you listen to your adult parent. Well, we might be aware that the scriptures, my holy scriptures will say to me, like Jesus would have said in the Gospel of Mark, suffer the little children to come unto me. Basically, you are saying, if we made it into easy English, don't stop that child from coming and having access to me. So already in my scriptural teaching and understanding, the worth and the well-being of a child is important. The human rights of a child is important. So whether we're an adult parent working with your child, I think we're in a space now, especially now in the context that we're in, to be having more, if I can say, healthy conversations with our kids, guiding them from a values-based approach versus a rules and regulations. Listen, submit to me. Where are you going to get that? And in that fight, I mean, if you think about a child that might be, I know back in the days, they used to say, hey, watch out for the terrible twos and terrible threes. I thank God that in my family context, I have a partner in Marisha, and as a mother, I watch her operating. And I learned from her when the kids were acting up in certain ways, what were we not paying attention to? A lot of the time when you're thinking of children and the context in why they're responding. They don't feel safe when they're responding in irregular ways that you feel as an adult, they just need to submit to. So what is the safety angle that we need to enhance around them? What's making them feel so scared that they need to respond in a way? Even when children haven't eaten, have you noticed, Little Konolo, they get to a party. This is something that changed in our family practice. Before we go to parties, we make sure our kids are fed. Do you know that?
Mm.
But back in the day, I remember we'd go to the party and wait for the lunch. All I'm saying is we need to reconfigure this lingo of submission and how we journey with our children in a healthy way so that there's conversation and dialogue.
That's a very interesting perspective, Seth, and one that is very important, especially when you're in the context of teaching your children a way that you would love for them to follow and grow up, as the Bible tells us to train up a child in the way they should go. And when they grow old, they will not depart from that way. But sticking to the scripture, in your pastoral ministry, Seth, are there any scriptures that come to mind that guide how you parent or teach respect and boundaries to your children?
I think I draw from the Psalms with my children that we talk about praise, that we talk about God's presence with us. A lot of the ways that teaching happens with our families around music or for me and my children, I end up teaching about God or values and principles through the music that we sing. God is so good. The goodness of God that will come out of scriptures that we can read. They would sing a song with me or play an instrument together. So linking that our lives are full, that scripture actually ends up in our practices in our everyday. I have a song that I sing when I put them to sleep, and in that song there's a connection of praying for family, praying for their well-being, having a beautiful adventure that night when they sleep, that they'll feel protected, and when they wake up that they'll feel ready for the day. But we do it in a singing way. So scripture for me filters into the songs that we sing, the stories that we tell. And one of the scriptures that I reflect on for my own life, and I've tried to share it many times over with my kids, is Micah 6:8, to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. Has been something that I say, well, where's the fairness in the space and the conversation? How are we being fair with the people that we are with? How are we being merciful and compassionate and understanding? How are we actually walking with God? So I've had these discussions with my kids and said, like, you know, how has God been with you in the space? Do you feel that this is the way that you can respond? Is that your understanding of how God would be with you? Again, I want to say I'm learning and unlearning. I haven't arrived safely at the point to say I'm getting it all right. But even when I make a mistake and I know I've erred and I haven't done well as a father, little Honolo, I got to go back and say I'm sorry. And maybe my kid might say, well, Dad, you said sorry a week ago, and say, well, you know, I need grace for today. I'm regularly saying to my children, there's a need for you as young people. I've got teenagers now. You will stand up for the well-being of people that are not feeling like they can speak for themselves. So we talk about these things regularly. You know, we have the conversations that are out there that need to be held. And ultimately, I think in that way, the gospel context, or me reading my Bible, finding time for prayer, teaching them through songs and stories, helps them understand their faith, but also how to live, I'm hoping, a more healthy life of well-being for themselves, for the others they interact with, and the environments that they are in.
You know, it's very refreshing to hear a father who's raising his children with such principles. Seth, I want to move on to something else. What would you say to a father who's listening and who wasn't taught how to model those boundaries, but wants to break that cycle for his children?
Yeah, I think a lot of men out there, you know, I have a group of soccer friends where the work I do with Heartlines really has helped in the space of working with men. And sometimes, you know, it will take a man a while to get to the space to actually share deeply. But we find those moments, and they are precious moments. And they are moments about how they respond to their wives. Unfortunately, I found many experiences, little Konolo, where men know they've made mistakes. Or like my father would have said to me, hey, you flopping it. Don't flop it, son. Don't flop it, boy. You know, so there are men out there that we're flopping it. We're flopping it with our families. We're flopping it with our partners. We're flopping it as young men with our communities that we're in. I think there are men that are out there in the corporate space that are enjoying their lives. They're doing well economically, but they're not happy. So there's a lot that's going on. And one of the key things I end up talking to in some of the coaching work I do with, whether it's in the religious space, community space, or even in the leadership consulting, we don't have to go at it alone as men. The strong man concept. Well, how strong can you be? I think there's a lot more of healing that can happen when we can acknowledge, listen, patriarchy is a social construct, and I'm also being affected by it as a man. I don't have to bear this empirical view of myself. I'm lording over the earth. I'm born with some blessing in me just because they say I'm a man. So I got to take the lead. I got to know everything. Well, I can ask. I can learn. I can explore. And so I find that for us, this is important. In my own journey, finding a mentor and a coach that could reason with me has been important. And I'm grateful to God that while I had my father, he's late now, there were other, if I can say, mentors and coaches that came along in my life that have walked with me, that have held me accountable. This value of accountability is important. There are many of us that are men out there, and we see ourselves struggling and our other men folks struggling as well. And when they're struggling, what are we saying to them? In the last month, I had a conversation and this man spoke to me. He says, it's not going well at home. My wife and I are struggling. I said, no, I hear you, bro. How can I help? If you want this relationship to work out with your partner, that change is required by you. You're going to have to embrace the tough changes that you've refused. And some of the things that men are refusing is like to be more empathetic and more understanding that it's not all about you. Sometimes we're like raptured in the world, like, you know, it's my way or the highway. This kind of conditioning makes it very unhealthy for us to partner with our partners, to serve our children, to serve our wife. So possibly we're going to have to say, listen, it's our way and let's find many more ways together so that we can balance this thing called life. You know, what are the lines in the sand that we need to draw? Lean into that scripture in the Gospel of John that we hear about. I think there are some lines that we need to put in the sand that helps us to protect ourselves as men and work out, you know, what are the healthy practices? Can I be aware of how I'm feeling in the moment so that I don't respond in an irregular manner? Can I step away from the noise? Like if it's getting crazy and I know like my temperature gauge is going up, can I pause, breathe and take a walk and go cool off before I start disrespecting my kids, disrespecting my wife? People may not say it like this, Little Konolo, but when you're shouting, screaming, losing your mind, even now in November and what they say sometimes is the silly season, you're hurting the people that you love. You're disrespecting the people that you love. And can we do it better? Yes, we can. It means that we're going to have those courageous conversations, interrogate the reality, provoke the learning, tackle the challenges, and ultimately we want to see men and fathers that are out there enriching their relationships with those that they say that they love.
You know, Seth, that is so well said. Firstly, I want to say rest in peace to your father. Thank you for sharing that, Seth. I'm glad you mentioned the mentors that came into your life, because in this day and age, mentorship has become more and more important. I mean, now you look at the statistics, we have about plus minus 28,000 youth, juveniles, who are sitting in prison. Mentorship is needed, Seth. And I was privileged to be raised by, well, helped being raised by a pastor, as well as uncles and mentors who stood alongside me and prevented me from going into a path that could have led me into darkness. But not everybody has that privilege or opportunity. So I want to ask you, Seth, both as a father, as a family member, as well as a pastor, how can uncles, mentors, or church leaders support young people in learning respect and boundaries, especially when a father's absent?
Yeah, uncles out there. I mean, I have some great uncles, you know, some awesome, beautiful uncles. And I mean, like my one uncle was a footballing uncle, you know, and he just loved sport. So the connections that we made was through soccer. Another uncle of mine actually taught me to read time. My dad was there, but my uncle who lived with us in the family that I grew up with, Barney Augustine. Today, I know how to read digital time and clock time because of my uncle. So those are family uncles. Like, you know, these are uncles that are my mother's brothers. Another uncle, my dad's late, but his brother's alive. Uncle John, I call him, a known Pastor John Nyker. I mean, an amazing uncle. He's a pastor, but I think more that I drew out from him was music and love for worship. And yeah, my dad was a musician as well, but I saw my uncle playing the saxophone. And guess what? My dad never played the saxophone, but I, you know, I'm not a top player, but I can mess around on wind instruments. But I saw this uncle of mine. But also we have uncles in the community. Like I grew up in a context of, I remember Uncle Shamim Ali. He's still alive and I thank God that he's alive. A great friend to my father and my mother, and our families knew one another through the footballing community of Carlisle Football Club. And Uncle Shamim Ali was actually a great uncle to me as a coach in soccer. And he still, I mean, today he has my contact details. He'll WhatsApp me when my dad, you know, passed on. He checks on and he'll still say it like they say, how are you, son? You feel like while my dad passed on, there are these people around. I think sometimes that space of where fathers are absent, there are those men that can be healthy partners for children and youth that are out there. And you made mention of young people. There are many young people, Little Konolo, who are missing their dads. In this week that passed, I watched a young boy be loved and cared for by a community of women that are around in his life because his best friend's moms are in his life and his best friend's dads are in his life. And in a day-to-day environment and on the weekends, he's hanging around with his best friend's parents. Think about it. I think I've been a recipient of that kind of love and care growing up. Today, things have changed, though. Like, you know, I think people have become a lot more individualized in some ways. But still, there's a context of, am I caring for those kids in the environment? So, you know, those uncles that are out there and elder brothers that are out there and that can actually be a positive influence. And let's also be aware, like I as a dad, I want to be sure. The uncles that are in my family that are now being uncles to my kids, these are family uncles. I want to make sure also as a father that I have a good social understanding with them, that they need to know, listen, I'm the father of those children. They are there to be uncles and maybe, you know, support avenues, but I also want to be sure that they must be safe in light of the well-being of my children. And I know this is a reality. So when we think of young people, if they are positive men and active and present men, responsible men, caring men that can help fill the gaps. Can you imagine the children that are in the religious spaces like the church, like the mosque, like the temple, in our communities out there, Litlokonolo, children who don't have families. Even now when we come into the season of Advent, I have an adopted brother into my family. I know that around 13, he lost his mom and he never really had access to like these family connections. But guess what he did? As he grew up, he experienced having family around him through my family. And then I've watched him as he's had his own children. He decided, listen, I don't have, you know, my elders around me all the time, but he decided his children will also be part of our family. So there's a gift in the communities around us, Litlokonolo. If we look and find, I think there's a lot that the community and, you know, in the work we do with Heartlines, we talk about social fathers that I will call like coaches and mentors. You can help us close the gap for children, both men and boys and women and girls that are out there who are actually needing an adult partner to walk with them. And this is the awareness that it takes. It says, listen, let's be a helping hand to help the generations that are coming behind us. So, you know, I'm hoping that as a father, I firstly have to handle my business in my own home, make sure that I do well by my kids. But hopefully I can also do that within the context of the church and the youth spaces that I filter and the organizations that I serve.
Very well said. Always great being in conversation with you. I've seen the gray hairs. Is it safe to call you Uncle Seth now?
I'm hoping that with the grays, you know, come some wisdom as well. So some people say Malume.
Malume Seth, your wisdom has been well received. Seth, again, so great being in conversation with you. You've given us really some gems for us to ponder on, especially in today's society. Many conversations are going around in terms of how are different generations passing on the baton. And you've given us such great examples, not only being a community worker, not only being a member and a family member of Heartlines, but also a dad, having learned those experiences from your own family tree and therefore passing it on for the betterment of our community. And, you know, for us to be able to set those boundaries, not only for ourselves, but also to teach our children these boundaries. And that's where we leave it for today. We hope we've left you inspired as we learn and grow together. To continue this conversation and to connect with more values content, visit our website at www.fathersmatter.org.za. Or if you are a dad, malume like Seth Mkulu, a pastor, or even a much needed mentor, and you're looking for support to help you on your fatherhood journey, you can join our Fathers Matter WhatsApp coach by sending hi to 060-058-2107 on WhatsApp.